From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The Utah artist Brian Krzyznik says the most basic objective of his art is simple, to make good pictures. But he understands there's a lot more going on when he's painting. He calls it a swirling myriad of stuff, form, art history, metaphor, accident. But he says there's just far too much happening for him to harness or direct. Krzyznik once wrote, "I do my best work when I participate with, rather than compel, the innumerable elements that make up art." Brian Krzyznik's pictures have come to be incredibly popular, and he's thought of as a rising figure in the world of art, art that he produces in the rural Utah village of Kanosh. Today in the program, Krzyznik is joining us to talk about his art, figures that are wry and flowing with movement, images that are at once simple and yet deeply embedded with meaning. We invite you to join us today, after the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Well, despite the critical acclaim and the incredible popularity of his work over the last few years, the Utah artist Brian Krzyznik is circumspect about his work and about the inspiration that fuels it. If you were to pin him down, Brian will say paints his hunches, that he's just trying to work out an idea in his memory until he understands why he was drawn to it and why it matters. The late Welsh poet Leslie Norris, a friend of Brian's, wrote, "Krzyznik illustrates the lives of his imagination." Brian Krzyznik's latest exhibit is closing this weekend at the Utah Museum of Fine Art on the campus of the University of Utah. And today in the program, he's joining us to talk about his work and his life. We invite you to join the conversation. 801-585-WEST is the number, 801-585-9378. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. There's another element in the program today that we want to offer. You can actually look at some of the pictures we'll be talking about during the program if you go to our website, kuer.org. Go to the website, click on Brian Krzyznik's Painting from Life, and then double-click on the black window you'll see there in the with the file name and the image of Krzyznik's work. To scroll through the images, just put your cursor on the top edge of that black box, and you'll get a drop-down menu to control the slideshow there. And we'll refer you to the particular numbers of the paintings as we go along, but we thought you may want to join us during that part of the conversation. The painter Brian Krzyznik works at his studio and home in Kanosh, Utah, graduated from Brigham Young University in painting, completed an MFA in printmaking from the University of Texas at Austin. He had his first gallery showing in 1986, completed his first large-scale painting about 5 years ago. An exhibition, as we mentioned, of his work ends on Saturday at the Utah Museum of Fine Art at the campus of the University of Utah. We'll tell you more about that as we go along, but Brian Krzyznik is joining us here in the studio. And Brian, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Good to be here, Doug.
I wanted to ask you, you have said, you said something once, your family traveled a lot growing up.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering, at what point, as you're following your father from country to country, did you think, not that I wanted to be a painter, because I know that came later, but at what point did you figure, I think I want to be an artist?
Well, it was that decision also was very late. All along, I think back on my life growing up, my mother would take us to museums. I remember going to museums, but I was not particularly interested in painting or painters. Mm. We spent a lot of time looking at artifacts and at Buddhist temples, and my home actually growing up, which was the artifacts of our home, which traveled to different
right.
buildings.
Yeah.
But the furniture and such. But the things on the walls tended to be more artifacts than paintings.
Huh. Photos.
Temple rubbings or needlework from the hill country in Thailand, or, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so it actually, I never, I drew, but as play. It was, I had buddies that we would get together and one of our games was to draw. And they were funny pictures usually. Similarly, we would draw the restaurant, for example. That was a game we'd play and draw these crazy things happening at restaurants. And it just never occurred to me to be that anyone would become a painter. It wasn't that I identified it as something that I didn't want to do. It just never occurred to me that that was something that somebody did. I knew no painters.
Huh.
They were people in books, and I had no idea what I wanted to do before I started school here at the University of Utah, which I didn't graduate from the U of U, but I started my art studies actually here.
So the process of becoming a painter then was, how did it work? At what point did you figure, I'm good at this, or I really like this, or maybe this is my calling, if you even think about it that way?
Well, when I started here, actually, I was putting off deciding what I wanted to do for a living. I don't know how long I thought I was going to be able to do that, but
like a lot of people.
I figured at least the rest of my senior year in high school. I was in Pakistan at the time, and that was when the hostages were taken in Iran. Wow. There were demonstrations at the embassy in Pakistan. Demonstrators came out to started breaking up the school. We were evacuated. This is in November of my senior year. And so I was evacuated from Pakistan. My brother Paul was attending school here at the U of U. I came here just to stay with him and figure out what was going to happen next when I found out that they'd graduated the seniors early. So suddenly this buffer of a few months of the remainder of my senior year was gone.
Yeah.
And so I started just – I was taking general education classes, and I took an architecture class from Peter Goss. I believe he still teaches
here. He is, yeah.
And that was it for me. I knew a few architects. I liked them.
What do you mean that was it for you? I want to be an architect.
I thought this is what I want to do. I want to be an architect. So I talked to Peter about majoring in architecture. At the time, there was no undergraduate degree in architecture. I was taking some ceramics classes and enjoying it, but really not ever even considering it as a vocation. And so he said, well, you get an undergraduate degree in whatever you want, and then we'll teach you how to make buildings. And so I thought, well, I guess I'll get an art degree. Might as well. I'm enjoying this.
Wow.
But I started in ceramics. And at this time, I turned 19. I became a missionary for the LDS Church in Denmark. And I thought, well, when I come back, I'll get my undergraduate degree at BYU in ceramics, was my intention, and then come to the U of U for architecture. I met Joe and Lee Benyon. I lived with them for my first summer after my first year of art studies, to work in Joe's pottery, and learned that I'm not a potter. That was a great thing to learn and a very important summer. It was a wonderful, magical summer for me. And Lee said, why don't you mess with my paints? I had not had any painting classes. I'd never used any of the materials of oil painting. The first painting I did was in her studio.
Wow.
And it wasn't good painting, but that was the beginning of... It seemed like there was something trying to emerge in that medium.
Well, it wasn't good painting, but I guess for you it was good enough. I mean, you thought that there was something there?
Yeah. I was heavily influenced, of course, certainly by Lee, still am. My whole life, every once in a while you'll find a thread and it just feels like, oh, this is the one I've got to be on. Not necessarily that the results are stellar at the moment, but okay, I found something that I need to stick with. And I realized, even though I was probably better at ceramics at that time, certainly better at ceramics than painting, I realized that that was not my path, and that there was something happening with these other materials that I thought I needed to explore. And I did a lot of printmaking and as well my undergraduate degree. As you mentioned, my master's degree is in printmaking, every once in a while I even try to change media now to acrylic, and because I see some things that other artists are doing with it, and I just for me it is oil paint and it's hog bristle brushes, and that's the one that we dance together well, and the other is it just doesn't come together.
You said something once, interesting, wrote something that if artwork does not accomplish significantly more than the artist originally intended, then it is poor work. What did you mean? It has to have purpose and have intent, or because your work is so whimsical.
Yeah, well, the paradox of that statement is, how do you set about accomplishing more than you intend?
Right.
I mean, you can only intend something and hope the other thing happens. And and I think that's what I meant, that you have to be going somewhere, but But the work, if it's really going to be meaningful, and frankly, if my work is meaningful, that in, at one level, that's really none of my business. It's enough for me to become involved with it, to love what I'm doing, to try to make work that I love, and then hope that the other things happen. And that it happens for me too. People will often say about paintings, well, what did you intend? What did this mean? And they're surprised to find out that I'm learning what it means at the same time they are. I've had a little more time with it, but but I'm watching it unfold, and I'm doing something to see if there's something there, and observing it at one level as a spectator. I'm not creating something that I then want to deliver an experience I want to deliver to you. I'm having it with you.
But do you think of it, or do you like the idea of it being purposeful? That is, do you draw a distinction between what a woodworker might, a piece of furniture, for example, something that has a piece of a purpose like that? Do you see a distinction in that? For example, we had a conversation with Joe Bennion, who's a potter in Spring City. A program a couple of weeks ago talked about he liked the idea of there being purpose in his pots, that people actually put them to use. Do you think of that in the same way with your paintings, that they're not useful in the sort of practical sense, but that they have that kind of purpose, that they're vital, I guess?
You know, I think you're kind of touching a nerve, actually. Huh. It's what are paintings for?
Yeah.
I go through that all the time. I have a sense of, What do you think you're doing? This feels very selfish. And then what do people use these for? They're wonderfully useful to me. And then off they go. One of the things that was very attractive to me about ceramics is you make something that somebody uses, and it also has to be beautiful. And there all those other layers are happening. And I feel that. I think that when I look here, I'll stop talking about my work. And when I go to museums, and when I think of a few experiences with paintings that I've had, and I feel like I have become more human because of time I've spent with paintings. And you can't expect when you go to a museum and you see a Rembrandt, you're not seeing everything. Now Rembrandt was anything he did is worth looking at.
Sure.
But you don't look at a book and see everything he did. You see it edited down. And I suppose I hope that my work would also benefit from editing down. I can't go to the studio and sit down and make the thing that will change your life. I have to work and let those things emerge when they will, because it feels very much like it is not just a matter of my willing it to happen. My will needs to be present, but I have to be working. I have to be trying. I have to be trying things that are not going to work in order to maybe stumble sounds too casual, but essentially it feels like to stumble onto a metaphor that changes me and it seems also is useful and beneficial and changes someone else as well.
Let me bring another voice into the conversation. Brian's wife, Suzanne Krzyżnik, is joining us here in the studio. And Suzanne, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Doug.
Let me get you to, if you could, help us understand Brian's work, put it in context maybe. You've said that his voice, you know, the work that he does, is one that cannot be mistaken, and that his work is oddly familiar to people. How do you talk about his work? How do you sort of define it if you do?
I don't, but yeah. I could maybe for the purposes of this interview give it a shot. I think that Brian, and maybe this is different than a lot of painters who are painting right now at this moment, or maybe not, I mean, I don't know all the painters painting, but
sure.
It seems like not as many people are interested in painting a moment in a story. Brian's paintings to me feel like stills from a larger thing,
like a larger narrative.
Yeah, that the people in the story were doing something right before we came up to look into the frame, and that when we leave, they're very much going to continue on with whatever it is they're doing, which may be apparent to us as we look at it, Or maybe we just think we know what they're doing as anybody who people watches, you know, do I really know what these people are talking about? I think I know what they're talking about.
I would interrupt to say I don't always know what they're doing either.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, he doesn't insist that he knows.
Right. That's
if,
a better
if
sure,
that makes
sure,
sense.
Sure, sure, sure.
As opposed to, for example, someone whose painting is about space or relationships between color or is a landscape photograph, as it were. You know, Brian's paintings have as much to do with the sense of ongoing stories as they do with what's inside the frame that you and I are going to look at when we go in. And so what I see people responding to and what they talk to me about is their life that's happening. And they come and they look in this frame and they see a moment that they recognize from their life. And they talk to me about their life and how it's being illustrated by this picture. And of course, it's not because we don't know, you know, Brian doesn't know these people. But there's a sense of, oh, this is my family. I can't tell you how many times someone has said, and I looked at Tricks with Paper or Large Horse, Small Riders, or, you know, whatever, Spoon Tricks, and I thought, oh, that's my family. And so
what's he evoking there though that makes it so familiar? Is it expression? Is it emotion? What is the thing that people find familiar about it? Is it a expression? Is the thing that I think I'm sort of drawn to.
I would expression is a good word.
Yeah.
I would maybe say that Brian's paintings are so full of relationship. Even when it's just one person in a painting, that person exists in relation to, I don't know, you know, other people or – but there's this incredible sense of connectedness, a living kind of connectedness. I don't know how he does that, but it is a – I think it is a somewhat unique feeling people get when they look at it that – this is someone I know. Or I had a dog just like that. And of course, when they describe their dog, it's nothing like that. It was a small dog and it wasn't red. And it was, you know, all these differences. And yet that man with that dog, there's something about it that they say, oh, that's my father or whatever.
Suzanne Krzyżanek is with us along with her husband, the painter, Brian Krzyżanek. Brian's Painting from Life closes on Saturday, so you only have a couple of days at the
–
oh, no.
Sunday, actually.
Oh, Sunday.
Yeah.
Good. Glad you mentioned
short
that.
Hours, but it is.
But Sunday. Okay, so you've got another day. Good. Thanks for that. The University of Utah's Museum of Fine Arts. For details, you can go to the museum website. Visit us online at KUER.org. You can call the museum at 581-7332. We invite you to join us if you like. 801-585-WEST is our number. 801-585-9378. Our email address, radiowest@KUER.org. And remember, you can go to the website and click on Brian Krzyżanek Painting from Life, and you can see a slideshow and go through some of the paintings that we're going to be talking about in the program. We need to take a brief break. Back in a moment. This is Radio West on FM 90 and XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. In the heart of rural Utah, you'll find a painter who is receiving a great deal of attention for his work. Brian Krzyżanek lives and works in Kanash, Utah. His fanciful pictures are selling out in galleries around the country. Krzyżanek's latest exhibit is closing this weekend at the Utah Museum of Fine Arts. And today on the program, he's joining us to talk about his work. We invite you to join us as well. 801-585-WEST is the number, 801-585-9378. Our email address, radiowest@KUER.org. And go to our website at KUER.org and click on the Brian Krzyżanek Painting from Life section there, and you can go into some of these images that we're going to talk about. And Brian Krzyżanek, I want to talk, and Suzanne as well, about, and you'll find this, those of you who are on the website, at number 5. You'll have to click back a few. It's called Bearing News. Yeah, the long one, the long stretch. First of all, Brian, describe this, if you would, for us, for those who can't actually see the image. And talk about what you were getting at there. There's a man who's sort of stepping away from a group of three people, approaching a woman who is asleep. Where did you get that idea?
Well, I'm having to reach back quite a ways, but I do remember painting it. It's strange. I don't know how many. I think I probably have done thousands of paintings, but it's funny to me how many of them I still remember. And Bearing News.
You remember this one?
Certainly. Well, I own this one. Yeah. It lives in my house.
That means something, doesn't it?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. Because I don't – well, there's just simply not room. I paint all of my paintings for my house. There's just not room for them. So, but Bearing News, what I was interested in, what became the issue that drew me into this painting was the space of time just before you learn something that is going to change everything. And I myself, in this particular painting, don't know if the news is good or bad. I have some ideas, but those ideas change. But what I was interested in painting it was that this man, there's this group of people on the right, and this, as you say, this man is broken away. He's been designated in some way to be the one to deliver the news to this woman who's sleeping. And there's a space between him and her.
The space is an important part of it.
That's what the painting is about to me, is that space, that just that instant before he wakes her and delivers to her the news, bears the news that changes everything. And as I think I indicated, I don't know if the news is good or bad. It's heavy. I mean, it's not trivial.
Really? You don't think it's a joke she's going to deliver?
No, I don't. I don't. Or the takeout has arrived or something like that. You know, but I think that it's big news. And I think about times in my life when I learn something that changes everything, and how just seconds before that was a different world, and now with this element, everything, the world has been completely recreated, and that's the poignant thing that drew me into this subject.
Suzanne, what do you see when you see it? Do you fill in the story? Wondering what it is he's going to say?
No, I don't.
That ruins the experience in some ways?
I've never thought about that. No, I don't think it would ruin the experience.
Isn't that mystery the thing that's so delightful about the image?
Well, to me, you know, I don't think about paintings like in that way. To me, that is a very peaceful painting. It's a very loving painting. They're being very gentle with her, the woman who's sleeping.
Sure.
I don't think they're bringing her any kind of terrible news. They don't look like people look when they're bringing terrible news. You know, that's the funny thing about Brian's paintings. Nothing dreadful. Nothing. It's always going to be okay, and that doesn't mean that he just paints, you know, all these wonderful rainbows and unicorns, you know, all these. There's such a sense of some kind of overarching, long term. These people are going to be all right.
I'm the youngest child, you know.
Yeah, so you know, he feels like
the world
there
is
will
going
always
to
be enough brownies
take
for
care
him.
Of things.
The last brownie is for Brian. But that's not – I look at the painting and to me it's just this amazingly peaceful moment.
Yeah.
I don't make stories up. Actually, I do make stories up sometimes, but it's just in fun.
What did you mean, Brian Krzyżanek, when you said that you, as I referred earlier, you paint your hunches? You said this, I'm not a painter of people as much as a painter of the idea of people.
Well, the context of that statement is has to do with the way I simplify the figure as well. When people ask what I paint and I say, well, I paint people. Oh, you're a portrait painter. Well, no, I paint the idea of people. One of the things that people ask me about often is it's the archaic device of moving the frontal eye to the profile.
Yeah.
And I look at Egyptian art and can just plainly tell that they didn't do that because they didn't know better. I mean, they were observing things so beautifully. But I think they understood that the idea of a person is actually more powerful than Walter, you know.
Yeah.
that the idea of Pharaoh is something that you could fear and dread and worship and all those things. You spend an afternoon with a guy and, you know, he's a guy. And I like going into a painting without I am interested in the personalities and in the psychologies of the interactions, but maybe one of the reasons that people see themselves in the paintings is because I'm not painting because I am painting an idea that they can very easily just pop themselves or their father or their son or someone they know into that position. I have done a little bit of portraiture. What's more likely the case is I do a painting and I think, golly, that looks just like my sister-in-law or that looks like my brother, you know, after doing it rather than starting
out. Not intending.
Yeah. And they're welcome and they're welcome into the pictures. But I think that some people say, oh, the figures look like you, and that's fine with me. I feel like I am trying to talk about and explore every man, and so the idea of a guy, you know, like Rauschenberg in his Dante's Inferno images, his man was this guy in a towel became the idea of a man descending into hell rather than. It's me, it's you, it's anybody.
Yeah.
We all, at some point, spend time with a towel.
What did you... The ideas of dancing. Let me refer people to... this is 9/10, 9/11, 9/12, 9/13. Dancing dog, fish dancing observed, fish dance observed. Welsh poet, dancing dog. What's the dancing? Is it kind of an expression of joy there?
Well, dancing.
You
is
see
not,
this throughout your work.
Yeah, you do, and sad dances as well.
Sure.
I don't think you. I don't know if any of those are particularly sad dances. No, I don't look at them as expressions of joy. I look at them as fun. It's fun to draw. Huh. It is fun because I don't use models, and can manipulate the figures. It is fun to explore their movement. Because I'm not posing someone in a position that they would have to hold, it seems like doing dances or people flying, it seems very natural because I can. The dance, I feel like a dance that we can learn. One of the reasons that art is powerful is because it takes life and takes it out of the context of just normal everyday life and puts it into the realm of myth and metaphor. And that we can look at that and learn more from our life often than we can from just observing life itself. So you can learn things about life from the ballet even though no one's life goes like that. And so dancing in my paintings in my mind is that's like it is art happening, a metaphorical version of life happening. People dancing are just that's the metaphor of people interacting. Sometimes we dance with ourselves, sometimes we dance with others.
Do you ever find yourself explaining this to a rancher in Kanash? Do you think that the people I'm thinking, you know, good salt of the earth people who may like, you know, realism more than they might like, whether you define your work in any sort of way, a Kirshiznik kind of work. And do you think they understand your paintings? Do you find yourself trying to explain them? I mean, how would you?
Well,
my father, for example.
Hello, Kanash, by the way, if anyone at home is listening. They're generally a little puzzled by what I do, I think. But they like me. And they trust me, and so I don't, every once in a while something leaks out where you'll hear someone say, "Why would someone buy something stupid like that?" And not to me, they don't say it to me, but that's not the rule. Dean Perkins, who's a rancher and farmer and leather worker and amazing things. He was my bishop a while back. He wants to come watch me paint sometime. I don't suspect that he would be looking to acquire a piece for his home, but he just like I like to watch him work leather. I think he realizes, oh, this is something important is happening here. Whether I want to, I don't need a saddle, you know, but I think it's. I don't know. We don't talk a lot about my work, actually.
Do you like talking about your work, or do you think that that spoils it in some way, that there's got to be something kind of mysterious or spontaneous about it, that if you keep talking about it, it might ruin it?
Think about it too hard. I like talking about my work because I am also a spectator of it.
Huh.
And every once in a while, it is useful for people to hear if there is a story that led to a painting. There isn't always a story.
Sure.
I mean, sometimes they start with, golly, I mixed too much red. I'm going to need to use this. I'll do a red painting. You know, sometimes they start as trivially as that. But you have to – you hopefully something emerges that justifies the painting. But I don't mind talking. I think I like to talk about my work, don't I? Do you think I do? I like to talk about myself. My daughter, Leah, one time after a show, I guess I'd been talking about myself a lot, and she reached over and patted my hand and said, you don't need to keep talking about yourself. It was at breakfast, you know. So you can stop now, Dad.
Well, there are a sort of a series of pieces that are connected to a particular story, and this is the idea of practicing flight.
Yeah.
You've said that you think flight is rooted in our origins and in our destiny. What do you mean?
Well, one thing that this might actually shed a little bit of light on some of the questions you've asked already is one of the things that I'm trying to do when I paint is maybe accidentally, but it takes a great deal of work. But I'm trying to get in on what I call the big story. This not just my story, but the big cosmic story. Mm. And
all the existential stuff we go through and questions of meaning of life. And
kind of the myth of the whole thing.
Huh.
And so it's – I don't know where it is. That story is not mine to command. And so I actually – my own approach is to rather playfully keep poking into the canvas and say, oh, wait, here's something that's part of that story. That may be another reason why if I am successful at getting a little fragment of it, that people respond to it, because that big story is their story too.
Sure.
But but your question about flight practice? Flight, right.
Yeah. I mean, flight is
– It just seems
to me – You think we fly or flew.
Yes. It seems to me that there are certain things about – there's a certain consistency in people's dreams that have not known each other, have not informed each other. It seems to me that we either flew before we came here or we will fly, that flight is part of it. That seems very natural, and it seems kind of obvious to me. I can't defend it. But where I'm interested in these paintings is okay, so we're going to fly. We'll have to learn. I don't know flight right now. I know riding a bike. I had to learn.
Yeah.
And I fell down a lot. And so what was interesting to me is, okay, flight, people having to learn how to fly, needing a little instruction, needing a little help, landing on their head, getting helped up, you know, patting them and patching up their wounds and off they go again. And that was interesting to me.
It did start with a story. And Suzanne, I wanted to have you tell that story, if you would. And let me draw people who are with us on the website to 4A and 4B, flight practice instruction, and the same name for the other one, flight practice instruction. It began with a kind of moment, this series.
Yeah, a lot of Brian's work starts with something funny that happens in language, a funny juxtaposition of words or an ambiguous statement or something like that. And somebody in the family, our kids are getting good at it now, will jump on it and say, Dad, that's a painting.
Noah just misspoke the other day and said, I have a few paintings about your question. And I thought,
wow.
Oh, that's really good. Just a minute. I got to write that down. It's going to be a show title.
Sure, sure.
I have a few paintings about your question.
But we were driving through a neighborhood, just, you know, suburbia neighborhood, and there was a man out on his lawn practicing casting, fly fishing.
Yeah.
And as we drove by, Brian said, oh, look, he's practicing flying. And I said, wow. You know, that he, of course, he's not. And some of that gesture, the casting gesture, shows up in the paintings with the person on the ground that's got the
tether.
the tether.
Yeah, these ones, for example, just so you know, on our website, they're the ones that have them with the tether.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's where it all began.
Well, and what usually happens then is Suzanne or someone will say, that's a good idea for painting, and my knee-jerk response is...
Always. No, it's not. Shut up. Don't talk to me.
Really? You dismissed it?
Oh, yeah. I usually do. I get a lot of suggestions, sure. You might imagine.
Yeah.
And suggestions are good, Brian.
But I know. But I'm learning that you know, even if that's my knee-jerk response, you should listen to this lady. And so I started thinking about it, about the idea of practicing flight, which was just, I misspoke, saying he's practicing flying,
sure,
rather than fly fishing. And fortunately, she pointed that out. I thought about it for a minute. But
at some point, it made sense that maybe that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
We're practicing.
Yes.
We're practicing for something bigger, something – I mean, and from your Mormon perspective, it's quite, you know, this sort of eternal view that you're thinking about, a grander perspective.
Right, that we're working out something that even if it is kind of ugly right now, will give way to something beautiful. You know, I use the example sometimes of a child making horrible noises with a violin, that we encourage them because it's practice, even though the sound is not good, because of what we hope will happen. And I realized with these flight practice paintings that practice was actually an element of my work for a long time. People, one of the things that these people were doing was practicing something. They weren't necessarily very good at it. My dancers are not necessarily professional dancers.
Yeah.
They're a little heavy-footed.
Yeah.
They're working it out. It is not necessarily what you would pay money to go see on the stage. This is well, I don't know if you're a dancer, but this is you or me in the kitchen dancing.
Working
no
it
one's
out.
Looking. Yeah. Just and I think that the idea of practicing flight though does have a more expansive feeling of actually overcoming the principles of gravity in some way, and I hope I do. I really do. I think I will, if I'm very good.
Brian Krzyżanek is with us. His Painting from Life closes on Sunday at the University of Utah's Museum of Fine Arts. For details, you can call the museum at 581-7332 or just visit us online at kuer.org, where you can see a slideshow of Brian Krzyżanek's work, and you can follow along today as we talk about some of the paintings in his work. 801-585-WEST is the number if you want to join us, 801-585-9378, or our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We're going to take a brief break. Back in a moment. This is Radio West on FM 90 and XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we have with us the Utah artist Brian Krzyżanek and his wife, Suzanne Krzyżanek, here to talk about his life, his work. We invite you to join us. 801-585-WEST is the number, 801-585-9378, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Here's an email from Dan, who writes, my dad Rick went to BYU with Brian, met him when I was young, and I think just a few years ago at my parents' house. They have one of his paintings. I think it's called Two James and a Holly. I always thought it was a fascinating painting, and growing up looking at it, I just wondered what the people were doing and what was going on. It seems like a snapshot in times, like Suzanne said. It was my favorite painting as a child. So there it is, people, Suzanne, working out, sort of, gosh, I wonder what's happening in that. And I guess you like that idea, that people are sort of thinking, gosh, what is that?
Well, it is a way of continuing to invite you in to the painting. It's not something that's just solved in one go. It's Holly and Two Jameses, by the way, Dan. And I remember the painting very well.
You do?
Oh, yeah, I do. And I know Dan's father very well, too. What was funny about that painting for me is it was a big painting for me when I was in school. Later on, I went to make large paintings, so I went to visit Rick and saw the painting. I wondered what he had done to make it smaller, because at the time, it was the biggest one I'd done, and now, of course, I've done huge paintings.
Yeah.
It was like going to your kitchen in the house when you were a child. Suddenly, everything looks smaller than it should have. But I don't know, Dan, what they're doing. It was a visit of Holly Levenstein and her brother James and her fiance James to my studio, and just in the context of the visit, while I was at school at BYU, somebody said, "Well, this is Holly and two Jameses," and I liked the sound of that, and I think that in some ways it implies a narrative that draws us in that we don't.
Well, you know what else is interesting is it's not yours. You don't own it necessarily. I mean, they can create whatever they want out of it.
Yes.
Do you like that idea?
Well, like it or not, so it is.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't feel like it. I certainly don't want people to come to me for the only and the ultimate,
sure,
and the final understanding. I don't go to paintings myself with that kind of demand. So, no, I think that's right.
801-585 West, the number to join the conversation, 801-585-9378. Let's go to the phones. Jennifer's with us, calling from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Jennifer, welcome. Hi, go ahead. Oh, we lost her. Jennifer Trybeck. It may have been a bad cell phone. We'll try to get her back. In the meantime, let's see. Do we have Ben?
Yes.
From Salt Lake. Ben, welcome.
Thank you. I wanted to call and talk to Brian. I've admired his work ever since I was in high school. I used to go on gallery stroll and would see his work from time to time. For the last 11 years, I've been a full-time potter, and it was, I think, Brian's work and seeing Brian's work and Joe Bennion's work and Lee Bennion's work that inspired me to say, you know what, a Mormon can be an artist and can have a lot of passion in life. And I've always admired Brian's passion that he portrays, the happiness, and my pottery is very much, I think, a reflection of that happiness. You know, it's whimsical, it's fun, and Brian's work has always influenced me. I've been up to see the show, I don't know how many times, up at the U. I actually, for a short period of time, our work is under the same roof because my work shows in the gift shop there. But I have just always admired his work. I've wanted to meet him for years. I've loved his books, or the one book that has come out, and I purchased the catalog of the show. It's an incredible collection of work, and I just wanted to say thank you, Brian, for your influence on my life. And I'm just ask you a question too. You know, what influence has the LDS Church and your beliefs, your deep-seated beliefs, had on that passion? I've never seen an ugly painting, and there's a lot of ugly paintings out there in the world, but I've never seen an ugly painting from you. They're always full of happiness and passion and excitement, and just wanted you to respond to that.
Hmm. Ben, thanks for the call, by the way.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. It is a complicated... because I don't go to the easel with the intention of illuminating doctrines of my faith, some people...
Really? You're not working out elements of doctrine in your faith? Your understanding of it?
He said illustrating.
Yeah, I suppose you could take issue with that. But I don't sit down to make a painting I'm not representing the church by any means.
Yeah.
But I am a religious man.
Sure.
And so I would rather let that work its way into the painting more naturally rather than what I have seen happen to myself is when I come to the canvas intent on convincing you of something, there's a lot more places for deceit and for my misunderstanding and misconception and my own insecurities and frailties to work their way in, rather than when I come in just trying to find something good and true. It's informed by this, by my structure of truth and goodness and virtue, and I suppose that maybe I'll take issue with you a bit, Ben, on all of them being happy. And I think that it's...
He doesn't find them ugly, which
right.
may be a different thing.
Yeah, I think that is true. Thank you for correcting me on that. I'm thinking, obviously, right now about paintings I'm working on right now. I don't know if any of these will end up anywhere because they're in the early stages. But I'm doing paintings that actually have called The Terrible War, which feels very drastic for me. And you know, the painting of the lion attack and such, although it's not the bulk of my work. The bulk of my work tends to be kind of common every day. And even those, even the rescue, the painting of the lion attack UofU show and these terrible war paintings, it seems like the structure from which I come at even those sorts of subjects is an ultimate optimism. Because in my own life, it's not like I've not been touched by tragedy, either directly or indirectly. I don't mean to paint a picture of the universe that does not include difficult things. But I do hope that it comes through that I feel optimistic about the ultimate outcome. And the need to persevere through difficulties is because it is going to work ultimately. That's my faith. That's my confidence. That's my hope. That's my testimony. Hmm. And so I feel like my faith is hugely important to me. It's a part of me, and it's something that is always has to be growing and changing. And you're right. When I do sit down to the canvas, I am often working out my notions of heaven and hell, and I am working out my notions of our interactions with angels. But not illuminating understood doctrines. I'm more reaching out into areas that I don't necessarily understand quite yet.
Ben Kletchkol, thanks very much. 801-585-WEST, the number 801-585-9378. Back to the phones. Mike is with us in Manti, Utah. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Hi, Brian and Suzanne.
Hi, Mike.
I think you're being a little kind to Brian. You know, he's got this really bizarre way of thinking sometimes, and kind of, I think in the best sense of the word, you know, creativity. You know, he thinks of things that nobody else would think of, but seem right. My main question was, Brian, you paint your wife a lot in your paintings, and I said, I haven't seen your daughters, but I suspect you're painting your daughters a lot in your painting, too. What kind of influence do they have on your philosophy?
Mm. Do you paint your wife a lot in the paintings?
I don't ever – well, it would be wrong to say I never have used her as a model, because I think I have drawn you twice since we were married.
Twice I can think of.
Yeah. It's not surprising to me that I have a few ideas about that. One is that I think that there is something about the idea of likeness that has more to do that is not just limited to our physical features. We associate likeness as being something that is sensed specifically with the eyes, the same nose, the same eyes. And I think that we actually recognize people. You think about someone, and 2 minutes later they walk in the door, that we kind of sense each other in a lot of ways. And I suspect when people have said to me, oh, this looks like your wife, and you examine the nose, you examine the eyes, you examine the shape of the head, and none of those things come together specifically as Suzanne, but there is something about a lot of them that resemble her. My family influences me hugely, but not by posing for me, just by being the means of a huge amount of my human interaction. There are certain things you learn about being a human by having a son. There are certain things you learn that are very different by having a daughter. And then it's very different with a different daughter and a different son. And certainly marriage is, brings a lot of things to the surface that give me a lot of ideas for painting. But I'm not trying to fill the world with images of Suzanne necessarily, although I think that there are certainly worse objectives, you know. I think my own feeling is I think it's a little accidental. I mean, maybe Suzanne should comment on it if she's the subject of these.
They're not me.
You're determined they're not. Mike, glad you called. Thanks very much. 801-585-WEST, that number. I think we have Jennifer back from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Jennifer, hi.
Hello. Sorry about that before. Yeah. I don't know what happened. But are you there?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Great. Brian, oh my gosh, I'm a huge fan. I have several of your prints, and the first one was 12 Infants with Children. I guess it had run out of stock from Guild, and my husband actually spoke with you and your wife trying to track a copy of it down for me because I loved it so much, and then I've been collecting ever since. But I especially, all of your works really resonate with me and my family, but I especially gravitate to your pieces that show women nursing, women that bond with mother and child. And I wanted to know if you could speak a little bit more about that.
Well,
one
thing I would say, Jennifer, is you've given me an idea that I may need to pursue. The print you have is actually 12 women with infants, but 12 children with infants is...
it's going to be a painting coming to a gallery near you.
I've made a note in my sketchbook about 12 children with infants. Obviously, I have a mother and I have a wife and now I have daughters. And in my observation, particularly it being a father of the connection between Suzanne and our children when they're young, there's a certain connection between a mother and her children. As I understand it, also being very closely connected to my own mother. That is very difficult to understand at all from the outside. And when I paint women and children, women with infants, or being connected in that way, the way you mentioned a woman nursing a baby, that is a connection that I will never be a part of. And it's fascinating. It's beautiful. It's mysterious. It has a character that's different than any other relationship that I'll ever know. And I never tire of it. In grad school, one of my colleagues there once said, you know, mother and child, we've seen that. We're done with that. And I was surprised to find the world was done with mothers and children. This will be hard on the human race, I suspect. But.
Brian Kruschnick, his painting From Life closes on Sunday at the University of Utah's Museum of Fine Arts. For details, call the museum at 581-7332 or just go to our website at KUER.org. Suzanne, Brian, thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program produced by Elaine Clark. Our thanks to Jenny Brundine today, directed by Mike Anderson. I'm Doug Fabrizio.